Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is one of our deep dives. We're going to deep dive into the actual titles of the Skywalker saga. We're calling this episode Attack of the Titles, which is perhaps a controversial title for our podcast even, but we'll get to that. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok. Man, that title says it all. Why? How could you be upset at that title?
It should maybe be Defense of the Titles. We'll see how our podcast goes.
Oh, there you go.
But as always, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending, hot off the press, the next High Republic book, hot off the Audible listening with your ears press, Out of the Shadows by Justina Ireland. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. Check out Out of the Shadows because we'll be talking about it here soon. But that's not all, Ken.
It's not all indeed. We have another offer. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is offering 35% off across their website with a special Four Center code. To get your discount, enter the coupon code FC35 or visit the website with this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Edition book, The Lightsaber Collection. Check it out with the code FC35. And then when someone asks you, like they recently did, what's your favorite lightsaber hilt? You'll have the answer.
You can just show them a picture right here. All right, Ken, let's get into this. We are going to discuss the chapter titles of the Skywalker saga. What's the power of them? How much they embrace or shy away from the adventure serial roots of Star Wars? Maybe even what our favorite ones are. How many of these titles are open to interpretation and how many are just, nope, that's very clearly what it is. So to get us started on this conversation, I want to start with the biggest title of all, actually, which is Star Wars. What do you think that overall title for the story, the galaxy, the IP, you know, we just live with it. It's just true. It just is. But when you take a step back and think about it, does it work for you? What do you think about it?
It's the silliest thing in the world. And it works for me on every level. It's no different to me than Luke Skywalker. Come on. It is air, right? It is everywhere. It is, like you said, we grew up with it. You never question it. And I don't think you should question it. Definitely not too deeply. I'm just having some fun with it. But Star Wars, I mean, okay. Like, that's all you got? That's all you got? But it's perfect. It's perfect, Joseph. It's everything. It is wars. And what about wars? Let's ask about those wars. Nothing but Star Wars. I really do love the title, as wild and crazy as it is.
Yeah, yeah. Because when you really take a step back, it is high fantasy. It is adventure serial, you know? There's a war in the stars, in space. Space conflict. And I think as the story evolved, right, there's such tension in the title that is the name of the thing. It is Star Wars. It is literally conflict is built into the title, and so much of the story really advocates for empathy, for trying to understand where other people are coming from in an effort to avoid violent conflict, right? A series where the heroes often win by finding a non-violent solution, being called Star Wars, just gives it this great tension that it is there for these big ideas, but it also exists as this just fun thrill ride of watching weird space combat. And also just for the evergreen discussion of is Star Wars political? Well, you really can't have a war without motivation. So I feel like the name Star Wars is also like, yes, sorry, it's political, because yeah. People have reasons to fight wars.
Yeah, yeah, and it works on, you know, I'm sure we'll say pulp a lot today. I'm absolutely sure we will. And as you talk, I'm looking across the little shelf I have in my office, and just Star Wars itself. I mean, what you got? Four letters and four letters. Wow, what a great design! It's just simple. I'm looking at the old school VHS box I have on my shelf, and it's just such a compact, beautiful logo, more than even just a title. But then next to it, I have the novelizations, and that the one that Alan Dean Foster Ghost wrote, the original novelization of the first movie, it looks at so at home on my shelf as just this crazy dime store novel. Hey kid, you like good stories? How about A War in the Stars? Read this. It is so just pulp to its core when you see it where it belongs, on a shelf.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got swords, it's got space, it's got a scary guy in armor, there's this lady in it, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Just everything about it, yeah. And I believe that first novel still does have, like, from the Adventures of Luke Skywalker, right?
I think so. It's so far out of reach, and I'd have to move Funko Pops to get it. But yes, I think you're right. And it has the great the prologue in it about old Palpatine and his bootlickers and yes men surrounding them and all that kind of stuff. So in the Journal of the Will. So it totally feels like from the pages of Luke Starkiller.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just reached over and managed to grab my copy. And yeah, it is real big, Star Wars from the Adventures of Luke Skywalker. And then on the back, the big bold text says, Luke Skywalker challenged the stormtroopers of a distant galaxy on a daring mission where a force of life became the power of death.
Wow. Right?
That change a few names and that could be on the back of many, many a dime store book.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I also wanted to look up because this is a thing that, that Mark Hamill has said about his original script or what he was auditioning for, that he was auditioning for The Adventures of Luke Starkiller is taken from the Journal of the Wills, Saga 1, colon, The Star Wars. Not only is that just a huge, clear, firm reminder of the, you know, pulp adventure serial roots, inspirations of Star Wars, but there's also for me this like peek into Lucas as an auteur making exactly what he wants to make. And if that to him is like, that's the title. That's what makes sense to me. And then, you know, all those marketing execs going, no. No Journal of the Wills, Star Wars. That last thing you got, Star Wars. That's good. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Remember the last movie you just made, American Graffiti? Not the tales of young folks in Modesto. It was The Adventures of Wolfman Jack. Yeah, yeah, you just see American Graffiti. Yeah.
The Tragedy of Bob. Yeah, it's it's nice and straightforward. Yeah. So it's fun to look at Star Wars just as the main title. And I think there's just kind of like the seeds of a lot of the things that we'll be talking about in the actual title Star Wars.
Absolutely.
So thinking back to, well, 1980, do you think it's important that Empire Strikes Back was not Star Wars 2? What would be different if it had just been called Star Wars 2?
This is a great question, because I think it's tremendously important. It's tremendously important to what George was trying to do and what George has now got the chance to do at this point, where maybe he wasn't certain of just the continuing adventures. And by this point, when did episode 4 pop in? Was that the 81 date?
That was the 81 re-release, according to my research. So, yeah.
So even a little bit after, but George is really knows what he wants to do. And so I think that was everything. Star Wars 2, Jaws 2, anything like that. I do think it would have downgraded it. It would have just set up some expectations of which were already there of just continuing the adventures. I mean, hell, it's in the trailer that Harrison Ford does, the continuing adventures of our intrepid band of heroes. So you're up against that, and this is just saying, no, man, this is what the format is, and this is the second chapter, the second act of this bigger picture, and this bigger story. And I think it meant everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is one of the things Star Wars gets credited for, so many just shifts in entertainment, technology, storytelling, all sorts of stuff, how movie theaters work, everything. I think this is a big one. This is one that I think you and I experienced this, but maybe people younger than us didn't get the full brunt of it. Of sequel was synonymous with bad. Sequel was cheap ripoff of itself in order to make money. Sequel was cash grab. Like, sequel was a dirty word when we were going up, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Was it Gremlins 2 tries to completely lean into being a cash grab kind of sequel. And I know some people love that more. Grease 2, you can go on and on the conversations of whether or not now you want to look back and go one's better than the other. But you're right. Growing up, it had that straight to VHS ring to it.
Yeah, I mean, you had things like Godfather 2, up there as well. But in general, it did pretty well. It won a few awards. But in general, you know, at that time, The Empire was this rare sequel that was actually different because it was a continuation. You know, it was not just another adventure in the series like James Bond. I think like James Bond avoided a little bit of that sort of sequelitis because it wasn't, 007 14, as the title of a film. It was just like, oh, yeah, it's another adventure. And then a lot of things like, Jaws 2, Poltergeist 2, what Exorcist 2, Halloween 2, like there's so many that, we can debate them now of, study them and what are their merits. But I think at the time growing up, what I heard from the adult world as a kid was those are cash grabs. And Empire Strikes Back was different because the title reflected the truth is we're not trying to do the first one again. Really seriously, it's not like, remember those thrills? We're gonna remix them and repackage them so you can get them again. Like, it explicitly isn't, to the point where like that is what is like so fascinating and so brave about Empire, right? That that Star Wars is received as this ultimately, people die, a planet blows up, whatever, but it's a fun romp about good and evil, and don't think about it too much. And then pretty soon it's like, he just cut his hand off, but he's his dad anyway. It's a little bit more darkness. Like, the Empire is such a big swing and the title reflects it.
Yeah, and remember, it's the continuing adventures, not the repeating adventures. What's going on? And that's worked. You know, we talk about it. It's almost a topic for another podcast. So there's been great content out there on the internet about it, of just the reception of Empire in 1980 wasn't all thumbs up across the board. Again, expectations are present in any generation of fandom, but you couldn't say that the movie didn't, the title didn't lie to you. Let's just say that.
No, not at all. So let's dive in. Let's dive into the actual titles. I wrestled with how to do this, but I'm going to go in release order since we, experienced that a little bit. And also it is the evolutions of the titles, you know, make more sense. You are commenting back and forth if you go in release order. So we start with Star Wars. And then later, Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, April 1981 re-release. So Empire comes out and it is, you know, it's Episode V and people are like, what the hell? But then this re-release, Star Wars is, it's clear that this is the middle chapter and it's got this new name of A New Hope. And to this day, you got to be careful when you're talking about it or someone will remind you that, you know, it wasn't always A New Hope. We know. And we're going to discuss. Ken, we've already talked about Star Wars is a title of this film and also a title of the entire idea. But for you, what is the meaning of A New Hope? What do you get out of that?
Well, just in terms of the story, I think, you know, it's all pretty simple what it means. And whether it be Luke, Leia, or just a new hope emerging from the darkness, any way you slice it, title really works. And I think it's the better title. And I grew up, I'm staring across at my VHS set right now that says Star Wars Empire Strikes Back to Return of the Jedi on it. I absolutely think it's go with me here. I actually think it's like my favorite title of any Star Wars movie.
A New Hope.
I really think it is. And thinking about this going into this conversation today. And it just means it's kind of the point of the whole series. Hope's pretty powerful, you know.
Yeah,
you got all these things, redemption and the choices and light and the dark and how you work towards maybe the light, but you need hope, and it sounds like a bumper sticker therapy here, but I really think it has that meaning for me.
I really, really like that. I really like focusing on it, that even in the darkest time that there can be hope, right? I think it has, to me, it's been about Luke. It's been about commenting on the dialogue of, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. And like the title itself going, understand why you think that, Leia, but actually, I think it has been Luke, but I also retroactively really feel like it is Leia for my own interpretation. You know, they're both, the new hopes, not only because of the Skywalker blood and the force powers and all that, but Leia is really the holder of hope, right? And the person who actually knows what's going on and moves everything forward. So it's about Luke, it's about Leia, but I think in this much bigger way, like you're talking about, it's the new generation, you know?
Yeah.
It's about this importance of moving on and moving forward, you know, this idea that it's understandable why Leia says that in her famous message, but Obi-Wan is not the only hope. He's the old hope. Yeah. And it's time for the next generation to come into their own. And I think even though the title was applied later, it does have this like kind of great rhythm with some of Lucas's stated intentions of a lot of films in that era were dark. They were grappling with the gritty realities of the time, and he wanted something that was inspiring and to give people a sense of adventure and fun, but also hope. So I think it's got this great meta quality to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I really do believe it might be my favorite title in Star Wars, but that wouldn't have worked in 77. I don't think as many butts would have been in the seats. And that's just the nature of it.
Yeah. It would have sounded like, you know, some sort of pamphlet, alternative ideas.
Yes.
So it is one of the calmest titles, I would argue. Do you think it would have been different if it was a title that marketing depended on? I'm so fascinated by this that Lucas got to add this later, and it didn't have to affect butts and seats the way every other title has.
I think it would have been called A New Hero.
Holding out for a Luke? Yeah.
Yeah. holding out for a Luke, holding out for a hero. Yeah, I think it would have been somewhere in space. A new hero is forming or something like that.
Yeah, I just really like that. You kind of have to know it is exactly what Luke has thought it should be. I think maybe that's why it resonates with you, of you sensing like, yeah, this is the title of, you know, the essay of the Skywalker saga, and maybe of the whole Star Wars storytelling ultimately. And it was, there was no pressure on it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No pressure on that title. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And it's so much fun to think about, like, if it couldn't have been Star Wars for whatever reason, or it had to be Star Wars : something else. And, you know, what would have the marketing title been, you know, Curse of the Death Star, you know, a saber claimed, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Well, that's
holding
not
out for Luke.
That's not bad.
All right. Yeah. So we're going to move on then. Any other thoughts on A New Hope?
No, it's a new. Yeah, again, it's fascinating too. Just the choice of Star Wars, because again, remember, Star Trek is out there this time too. It all worked out as it should have.
Yes. Yes. I think, you know, there is that is a really a good thing, I think, to remember, and is sort of implied in our conversation here, but it's great that you make it explicit. There can be some kvetching in modern times about what Star Wars is doing to pander, cash grab, or make money. And just that reminder of, like, Star Wars has always needed to make money, or it couldn't exist in some of these choices. You know, it's interesting to see how they're impacted or not by that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So moving on to Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. Ken, is there any room for interpretation on this one, or is it just that literally in the film, The Empire Strikes Back?
I think it's pretty clear, especially to a film-going audience that is like, well, wait a minute, their big space station blew up, but that Darth Vader guy got away. So yes, that is what a title. I think it's a little weird and awkward too. I wasn't, though I was alive when this was out and about and getting made, you know, I clearly obviously have no memory of a bunch of podcasts bringing up and going, what is this title? It's like a 50s sci-fi film. But I could see that. I could understand if those conversations were being had. It's you know, you go from Star Wars to The Empire Strikes Back, and then you're like, well, does this spoil the ending? Like, what do you got going on here? But it does. It's pretty clear.
Yeah, no, I think it is. It is very literal. It tells you literally what's going to happen in the film. I think if you want to, there's room to take, like, the idea of, well, what does the Empire stand for? Because this is literally, yeah, no, like, Piet, Veers, Vader, they strike things. Yeah. But if you think of the Empire in the way that, you know, Maz Kanata describes it, of it's the same enemy with the different name, right? There is room for me to interpret it as, you know, the dark side, literally the dark side of the Force, but the dark side that we all struggle with, right? Because it isn't just the Empire that strikes. It is doubt and fear and pain that hit our heroes, you know, on like a deep emotional level as well. So I think it works very clear cut. Yes, the Empire literally strikes, but all these things the dark side represents are affecting our heroes. It is the dark middle chapter.
Yeah, and I kind of feel as though that's The Empire Strikes Back is you know, if it's like the beginning of the movie. You know, they struck back. Cool. Now we move on.
Yeah.
Story continues.
The Empire won't leave them the bleep alone.
Yeah.
So for you, what are your feelings? You shared some thoughts on the title, but I want to know, like, your feelings. Is it one of the best? Does it resonate with you? Where does it kind of land?
I think it's a great title in terms of just a template for what you can do, which is interesting because when we get to Attack of the Clones, we will discuss how people questioned about what you can or cannot do with these titles. Not to tip our conversation too much there, but it is it's a wonderful title. It stands up. But, you know, what do we all call it Empire. We all, when we're in conversation, Empire is my favorite movie. We don't say The Empire Strikes Back is my favorite movie often, you know, sometimes maybe you will. So already it's a weird kind of dance for me of it's long, it's big, it's bulky. It's got, you know, it's not perfect, but it's also perfect for what George was trying to do. So therefore it stands the test of time.
Yeah, I think for me, partially because I have such attachment to this film, but this great importance that you said of like, it's the first one that's got kind of a subtitle that ends up being like the title for the way that people talk about it, or the shortened to Empire or Jedi for Return of the Jedi back in the day. And now I feel like people just use initials, right? It's TFA or TLJ, you know?
Which is funny because I can't do that on the fly all the time. Sometimes I'm like, Return of the Sith Jedi to J.
Yeah. The evolutions over time of how we shorten things. But Empire Strikes Back, I think, for me, is one of my very favorites. I think there are a couple important things about it. It's active, right? It's got an active present tense verb, so it sounds exciting. A New Hope does sound like, you know, open up your book to this essay, you know? Oh. And Empire Strikes Back sounds like, some stuff's going to explode, kids, you know? Oh, yeah. So it really gets across that sense of action and adventure. It's this great balance between the pulpy adventure serial roots that went too far for some people in some titles. Mm-hmm. This one, it's comic booky to the point that, you know, Star Wars comics had Empire Strikes on them and didn't realize that they had stepped right on the title back in the day, you know? So it is that pulpy adventure serial, but it's clearly a little bit more mainstream because it's not using some of the big pulpy words that will upset people, like curse and doom.
Right.
Oh. You know, and baptism of fire, you know, and some of the more hyperbolic stuff that people don't like. So it gets that flavor, but it doesn't cross the curse doom threshold, you know?
Yeah, the curse of the Empire Returns would have been there you go.
That's a big yeah
one. Yeah no yeah. You're right. No, I think you're right. It's pretty straightforward. Even when I call it awkward, everything it's wonderful. But because I think you're right, it is just so straightforward that it's easier to accept.
Yeah, I also think just like if you were showing a kid the films in release order, and you're like, okay, the first one is called Star Wars: New Hope, and I'm not even going to tell you what the second one is called if that was possible. And a kid watched Star Wars: New Hope. And it's got the great ending with the medal ceremony. And then you could blow the kid's mind by saying, and the next one is called The Empire Strikes Back. And they could be like, oh, no, what's going to happen to my friends? Right. It's got some fear in it.
But there was a happy ending. They were all dancing and getting medals.
Nope. all right. So how do you think people felt when they went to the theater and it was labeled Episode 5 before Star Wars was labeled Episode 4?
Well, you know, having not experienced that in the theater, but I can tell you by kind of first noticing that kind of on my own, like, yeah, I think every generation would kind of discover some of the stuff on their own without a magazine or book or, you know, internet telling you. I just remember being blown away because I remember I had the novelization in my back pocket and, you know, taken from the Journal of the Wills. And I've told the story before, but I was convinced there was an actual Star Wars book out there and I'd scour used bookstores for it. So to learn to Episode 5 and I've only seen one prior, what? Like, and only one after? Like, it was the coolest thing in the world for me at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just delightful confusion, you know, is like that means something with where the story is, you know, positioned within the grander story, and is there more? Can I secretly find them in the bookstore? You know, whereas now, if something, you know, was released like that, you know, with sudden numbering that recontextualized it, there'd just be 800 think pieces of what does it mean?
What does it mean? Yeah, and I gotta imagine if you're sitting in the theater in 1980 and that pops up, your mind's probably blown too.
Yeah, delightfully blown minds. Moving on to Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. Ken, how do you interpret this title?
I interpret it as generations a journey, so to speak, of the Jedi returning, and that line with Luke, and there's so many meanings related to his own personal journey and his father and everything. But you know, we are introduced to this franchise with some old Herman in a desert saying, "I used to be one. They're gone. They're not here. And the galaxy needs that new hope." And to see that on screen, Return of the Jedi. Yes, you could just look at Luke. I just think it. I've always taken it as meaning even more than that, that the not necessarily the order itself in terms of robes, training centers, and paperwork, but just the spiritual center returning after years of darkness. That always had some resonance to me.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I agree with you. I think of Luke primarily, but I also really do think it is about Anakin and that it can be extended to that because it is his literal, you know, returning to the light side.
That's fair.
In that moment. And to get to your all the great stuff you're saying about the bigger philosophy of it, you know, I don't think it's explicit in the film. It is looking at the film as a chapter in this whole ongoing saga. But, you know, Yoda and Obi-Wan appearing shimmering next to Anakin and smiling at Luke. And Luke is the practical Jedi who has returned to like, look, you got your robes, you got your lightsaber, you got your head on straight. Great. The Jedi are back. We told you to go train some other ones, pass on what you have learned. You know, you are the seed of the future. There's all that practical stuff. But just Yoda and Obi-Wan, like, literally returning to go, like, mea culpa, you are right, Luke. I mean, that is me, you know, inserting my perspective into that shot. But I do have, like, the Jedi philosophy has returned. That Luke restored the philosophy of the Jedi. Not only did he learn the ways and succeed and help save the galaxy and help save his father, but in this idea that, you know, it is possible to come back from the dark side. It is possible to make it attachment of strength in the fact that Yoda and Obi-Wan appear, you know, are a little bit of like, good job, Luke.
Yeah, and don't tell Anakin here what we had said about him. Okay? Between you and I, but it's also why too, like, especially as the story continued, whether it be the Zahn books or otherwise, the Kevin J. Anderson Jedi Academy series, you get right to it. I had that sense of the Jedi are back, and Luke's in position, and he needs to rebuild it, and that just kind of naturally flew out of that title for me in that ending.
Yeah, absolutely. So, infamously, the film was almost called Revenge of the Jedi. How would you have felt if it was called Revenge of the Jedi?
Would have loved it. I would never would have questioned it. And I would have just gone years going, yeah, why? Right? I mean, the Jedi got wronged, man. I do remember early on, that's one of those first little, particularly kind of talking about the 1980s. We try to talk across all generations, but going back to 84, 85, you got some maybe some magazines, some Star Wars Insider or a Bantha Trax or whatever. When you first hear that, and you might even see the posters, or you might remember it in the marketing, I that was the first kind of ever thing I experienced in Star Wars where I went, oh, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. George said that's not what Jedi do. They don't seek revenge. I hadn't thought about that, which also now, especially in 2017, we often wondered, did you actually watch Return of the Jedi when some of those people were getting mad at that movie? Did you actually see Luke throw down his lightsaber? It was the first example of that for me at a very young age.
Yeah, yeah. I have very foggy, dreamlike memories of seeing, in particular, action figures, you know, still on the racks, but now they had the sticker for send away for this advance action figure from the next movie, Revenge of the Jedi.
Yes.
And I'm sure it was my brother because he's 3 years older. I'm sure some of my memory is talking through it with him, but I remember going like, oh, that's so cool, but wait. That doesn't sound like what Yoda talks about in Empire Strikes Back. He doesn't literally say, like, we Jedi don't do revenge, but, you know, I've talked many times about how much Yoda's, I felt lectured by Yoda of like, yeah, I want adventure and excitement, but I know I'm supposed to, you know, use the Force wisely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm supposed to never attack, you know, only knowledge and defense. And like, I have foggy memories, and maybe it is that kind of memory thing where I'm backfilling. But yeah. I remember going, that's so cool. Is that right?
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, I remember maybe seeing it in Sears catalog. I used to stare at those wish books all day. But you touched on something, too. Maybe another conversation for another time. I remember hearing Yoda say, wars not make one great. And me kind of being like, nah, don't you watch G.I. Joe? Like, don't you watch? Like, I know what Luke does. He's great. Like, stand off, green guy.
Yeah. Do you know the title of what you're in?
Yeah. You were in Star Wars.
Yeah. You want to talk down stars as well, Yoda? Just go after the whole title. But I think the other thing about it for me is it's such a cool story. So, you know, on like A New Hope, which was just like, I'm slapping this subtitle on my film that is so popular, it's being re-released again. You know, that's not a marketing risk. But the Revenge of the Jedi machine is already running. And Lucas goes, nah, no, I know it's, you know, I know revenge is one of the, probably the most popular words for 80s cinema. Like, right. There's such a dark strain of like, they took his child. They took his wallet. They took it with revenge. You know, like it, that was a part of macho storytelling, yeah. Vengeance. Right. Yeah. So that puts butts in seats, you know, yeah. And for him to go like, yeah, but actually my Jedi really love peace. Yeah. So they're only going to return. Don't care. Yeah. Like, that's one of those things that like Lucas is wears flannel and is made of steel, you know?
Well said. Force Center, well said on that. And I don't, you know, again, we know these behind the scenes stories so well. Sometimes I just admit the details escape me. But didn't he started out with Return, goes to Revenge, and then goes back to Return, right? Is that something I'm kind of remembering right?
I think so. I will be perfectly honest. I have not done the deep dive for this episode to utterly review.
And the details, and wait, you know, Lawrence Kasdan will tell you over a plate of tri-tip. It's fine. But like, I seem to recall something like that, which I like that version, even though I'm kind of half making it up, of just George knowing, trying to figure something out and then going, no, I know my story. I know what we're trying to put out there. And just make, because it's, he makes that switch back to revenge, like you said, late in the game. It's late in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Late in the game enough that people know. but so wonderful because it is. I think revenge would have done actual damage to the saga, ultimately. Yeah. Right.
It's against the very movie that it was the title of.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have fun with, like, there's tension in Star Wars because, you know, but this is different because it's literally the Jedi and it's literally about how Luke does not get revenge, right?
Yeah.
So you would have had to kind of wrestle with it as the title is a cautionary tale of what not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So utterly fascinating stuff. Absolutely love it. And I like anything that says the you can, you know, find merch that still says Revenge of the Jedi. And boy, is that great.
Yeah, I have a stack of patches, actually, that our friend Van William gave me.
Yes, that's what I was trying to remember. Yes. That's so great. That's so great. I'm glad the title wasn't that, but it's so cool that it almost was.
Right, yeah.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into the rest of the films of the Skywalker saga.
Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com. That's JennyLanda.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And we are back to continue a continuation of our discussion of the titles of the Skywalker saga. We talked about the original trilogy. We are now going to dive into the prequel trilogy, which, of course, begins with Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Ken, how do you interpret The Phantom Menace? I think you got a strong take on this one.
Yes, New Hope, by the way, my favorite title. Maybe The Phantom Menace is my favorite title. I don't know. I always go to Palpatine and he being kind of the Phantom Menace of it all, and I do believe that's there. But without a doubt, how could you not factor in the idea that George has some thoughts on how organizations and even people are taken down and how it is often an unseen enemy, an unseen evil, even if that evil's inside of you? I can't help but think that has a lot to do with the title, even though I do believe it's a lot around Sidious and Palpatine.
This is great. Yeah, because you have often said that that for you it's Palpatine. It's not Vader. It's really Palpatine. So I was curious if you felt strongly that, yep, Palpatine. But I love this idea that, you know, you mentioned that intro to the novelization. That the intro to that novelization has that big idea that Lucas never lets go of, that societies just get destroyed from the inside. So this idea that Star Wars Episode 1, you are the Phantom Menace.
If you're not careful,
you could be the Phantom Menace.
Yeah, and to be clear, I will absolutely lean in into Palpatine being the Phantom Menace of it all. I even all the way up to 9, and I think that tracks, and it's something to believe. And you know, as you and I always talk, we oddly enough, Palpatine is one of our favorite characters, despite being the evil at the center of it all, because he's just Ian McDiarmid makes it so delicious. But so I'll say that title's it. But it's very hard, especially with the. Looking back at the prequels, is not only we do, but everyone does and connects to George's themes. I mean, that's what he was saying. That's what he was telling us. It just personified by this old dude in a black robe.
Yeah. That he is the face of this, mystical evil and also the political ramifications that can let that evil loose on people, force them to give them into their fear and all that. So, yeah, I love The Phantom Menace as being about Palpatine. I think that poster, that great poster of Anakin with the shadow of Vader, right? Mm-hmm. I think that led a lot of people to feel like The Phantom Menace is Vader, because that's almost what like that poster looks like it's saying, right?
100%. No, I could absolutely get behind that argument and understand why some people might interpret it that way, other than that just being the best damn Star Wars poster ever.
Yeah. But I think for myself, I do think of Palpatine. I almost think, like, did Palpatine get to name this one? Because, like, he's proud of being in the shadows and pulling the strings and getting people to, you know, make bad choices themselves, you know, as well as actively going out there and doing violent things, cruel things. But I also just I like it is this feeling of the dark side in general. Again, that it, you know, I love that Kenobi has that line very, very early on of something elsewhere elusive, right? That really, it's almost just like the galaxy is moving in the wrong direction. Things aren't right. It isn't one thing. It's everything's moving in the wrong direction, and I can't put my finger on it. You know, like that connects to the idea of Phantom. You know.
Well, yeah, you got Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan in the beginning, you know, there's something going on here. And we're like, oh, yeah, this is the story. We know we probably got Palpatine and Vader and all these things. And it's really a trade dispute that's starting all these problems that Palpatine's like, peace is in place. So it's like the Phantom Menace is right from the beginning. It's winning.
Yeah, and I love that Qui-Gon is kind of pompous at the beginning of like, they're cowards. They're fooled really easy. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't understand why this is working the way it is because it's the Phantom Menace. Yeah. And then I think the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy really do speak to one another. And like you spoke so eloquently about the brightness and the wonder of A New Hope. And like, well, if hope is really, you know, the one pillar, then the other side we have this like, the fear, right? Phantom Menace even speaks to like this. That's a great way to say fear, right? I mean, Anakin's fear of what might happen to Padme, not for sure what is going to happen, but what might, that's a fear of a Phantom Menace. It might be, but it isn't. And he gives into that fear of what might be, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. To tie it to fears is this wonderful connection to me. And then again, we're especially for us in 1999. Oh, the story of Darth Vader. How's he going to fall? He's going to fall because of his attachment to his mommy. Like, you know what I mean? Like the fear of it. And it's like we're like, no, he's going to kill me. It's all there. It's a tax dispute. It's a trade dispute, and it's a fear inside this young boy who just wants to love his mother, and it does love his mother.
Yeah. So sad. So did you like this when you first heard it in 1999, or was this for you the beginning of that's too, you know, sci-fi pulp book?
Hated it. I think I did.
Did you really?
I don't remember that as much as I do the next one, but I remember not being super thrilled with it because it doesn't at the time, I wouldn't say it necessarily rolls off the tongue, where even The Empire Strikes Back just kind of, it just flows. The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, The Phantom Menace just didn't sound as powerful as the thought it'd be, because it was working. It was lurking inside my soul. So
yeah,
I there's probably one or two that title sucks conversations I had in 1999. It did go away quickly by even at the time, by my seventh or eighth viewing, I was very clued in as some of the politics of it and Palpatine and did like it by then.
Okay. Yeah. I don't ever remember disliking it because I have always been on this train of actively wanting and still do. I want the adventure serial embraced. I liked it. This had a strain of that made me really happy back in the day. I think I did have some friends who didn't like it. I really like it in retrospect because I've made this joke that The Rise of Skywalker could have been called The Blatant Menace, if you really interpret Palpatine that way. But it is this evolution of I'm going to hide in the shadows and I'm going to, you know, get you to give in to your own fear, everyone from Anakin to the Jedi to the people of the galaxy. And by the time we get to Rise of Skywalker, that is stripped away. And he's like, remember me, I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah.
Bow down. Yeah. I sent out a message.
Bow down to the Queen of Refuse. Admittedly, there's, you and I have talked about some of the lines of dialogue around Palpatine's return early on in Rise of Skywalker with Poe, and somehow Palpatine returned. You could have gone one step further, and had a character been like just clinching his fist, going, "I hate the Phantom Menace." Like, it would have connected for me.
Yeah. Final question I forgot to write this down, but I wanted to ask you about it. To my recollection, I don't feel like people said Phantom Menace that much in 99. Everybody was talking about Episode 1.
Correct. No, correct.
How do you feel about that? Do you think that the title Phantom Menace didn't get as much attention? Why do you think people really obsessed on the chapter title?
It was the marketing, right? It was so weird going back to some of our early conversations and even some of our early memories is as fans, and I would even love to hear from Star Wars fans who are a little older than us too, who you know, might have been in high school in 77 or something, where the episodes don't really factor in. And even after the reveal, and even after my mind is blown as a 7-8 year old going, well, this is chapter 5 of how many? And did you hear George wrote 9? Starlog magazine said it. Like all that stuff. But after that, I don't remember in high school being fascinated with the episodes, other than we thought maybe there was other movies out there. So when the marketing starts in and it's like episode 1, and the focus was suddenly on the chapters, it was a little change of pace for me. And I think that took the lead. It seemed to be kind of fun. It's like, we were finally getting those answers. Yeah. It's called The Phantom Menace. I don't know. We'll see. That's maybe not my favorite. We'll figure it out. But episode 1, we are going to the beginning. And that was the focus of the marketing, especially early on, maybe up until where the figures and the soundtrack came out. So I don't think you're wrong at all. I still in conversations hear episode 1 heard maybe just as much as The Phantom Menace or TPM.
Yeah, I think it was a real marketing choice. Like, I'm looking over at my Darth Sidious figure, you know, and it says episode 1, right?
Yeah.
And I think it really was every saga has a beginning. Like, I feel like marketing, or maybe creatively, that was where the focus was supposed to be. And The Phantom Menace was sort of like, that's got meaning.
Yeah.
That's about the story. But marketing wise, what we want you to know is it's the first one. It's where it all begins.
Yeah. That term SEO, it could be the bane of your existence if you're trying to make a living on YouTube or work for a YouTube company. But it works. The stuff works when you really track some of this stuff down. And I got to imagine 1999, they weren't using that term SEO, but they were looking at marketing research and probably phone calls and going, people aren't reacting to The Phantom Menace. Definitely reacting to Star Wars episode 1. And that just makes sense.
Yeah. Absolutely. But I feel like it's shifted. I feel like that's not the conversation now with, you know, current fan base.
Totally.
All right, Ken, let's get to the Ronto in the room. Star Wars episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Perhaps the most controversial title. Do you think it fits the film, or do you think it's inaccurate that clones do the attacking?
I remember at an early Jedi Alliance episode, I brought this up. Not with a lot of thought, just a lot of like, hey, it's 2014. We're having fun talking about Star Wars on the internet. We're all in on the joke, right? And I remember getting some real serious comments back and early tweets about Attack of Clones. I think by far next to maybe The Rise of Skywalker, I believe that one has some controversy just around the title itself. But
yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. But I think Attack of the Clones, yeah, I think it is the number one, like, what? And I'm kind of there for it now. AOTC. See, I even had a pause right there. AOTC. Yeah. I think it works. And I think you could have fun, keyword fun, debating what the clones actually do at the end. Defend? Rescue? Return? I don't know. Emerge?
Revengeinate? Yeah. Yes. Thank you for pointing out that, yes, The Rise of Skywalker is also controversial. I don't want to start controversy by claiming the most controversial title and being wrong. Everybody can have their own most controversial title.
But I will contend that Attack of the Clones is number 1 in terms of what?
Yeah, I think the we'll talk about both factors of it. The is it accurate question, and then that's way too adventure serial, way too pulpy for a lot of people. Yeah. So let me share my thoughts and see what you think.
Okay.
I think that in terms of that first question, is does the title make sense? I'm a big yes. I think that is, in fact, you know, the point. Like, I get that you could argue, no, the Jedi got lured into this trap and they're going to be slaughtered and this senator is going to be killed and Yoda swoops in with the clones and they save everybody. Right. But I think that's the point, that they are tricked into attacking by Palpatine and Dooku. I think that first battle of Geonosis is a microcosm of the larger successful trap of the Clone Wars, that the Jedi can just convince themselves that what we're doing is actually defense. But then by the end of the war, you realize, well, we were technically fighting over nothing. Not that there weren't some legitimate concerns about the Republic, but, you know, if the Padmes and the Bales of the world had their way, they would have been able to sit down and discuss them in a functioning government. And Palpatine made sure that was impossible and then ginned up fear on both sides and made this war happen. And the war doesn't happen unless he tricks people into voting for the clone army, which is really you know, when you follow the film, that's like one of the highest things that is that that's the actual motivating factor. That's why Padme is coming back at the beginning. Mm-hmm. He tricks the people via Jar Jar into going along with the army, and Yoda and Mace are like, well, we don't want to do a power grab. We go along with the Senate. So yeah, we'll go check these out. And yeah, it seems like a malignant force led by, you know, a fallen Jedi Dooku is attacking. We need to defend. And only then later do they realize, no, they're attacking.
If only the Jedi knew the difference between knowledge and wisdom. The core of that film, big giant force center. Well said. And I think in especially, I've had a couple times, some maybe friends I haven't seen in a while, who maybe knew me and around me were around me more in 2002, and be like, I've always known you've been a Star Wars fan, but do I hear, is it true? Rumors tell me that you like the prequels. Cause don't you remember, we all grew up and then we all became working adults in the entertainment industry. We all had pizza rolls and hated that movie. Right. We all hate that. Right. We're on the same page. And I'm like, no. And I don't like pizza rolls anymore. And the Lucas almost outthought himself to it's a little bit of a detriment, right? Everything you're talking about is the story. Is what Lucas was trying to set up. The clones are attacking because the Phantom Menace made him do it. And I'm just building on all this, and I'm telling this great story. These institutions falling from within, and here I am, or some people in a certain era just going, well, you know, the clones technically didn't attack, and it's like, yeah, you're missing everything below that. Everything that's is there for George, and there's some things to get held up on, and 3PO and truly deeply love me and sand. Yep. Sand's irritated. It does get everywhere. Make those jokes, make those sound bites. Yay. You're missing it all. And George didn't care. He's got that flannel on. He's got the soul of steel going and he's going to a museum in his jean shorts again. But I really think you're talking about what is the core of the success of the prequels is what is truly there if you look beyond the surface. And rant. Sorry, was that a rant? I don't know if it qualifies.
No, well said or well ranted, whichever one you want it to be. I really agree with you. And I get why people, you know, would question it. And fair enough, the clones didn't make that decision. Yoda did. So I guess you could call it Attack of Yoda, which would have maybe tipped the hand. But yeah, I just really love the spirit of it. Is it's got this rhythm with Empire Strikes Back. It is active, it is, you know, present. It's big action in the title, and it really evokes, like, yes, what happens in this movie is a failure, it is a mistake, you know, and it works in exactly the same way that, you know, Revenge of the Jedi being Return of the Jedi instead works. Yeah. Philosophically. Yeah. All right. So this one really bothered people for the whole adventure serial thing, right? How much did it bother you back in the day, and how are you coping these days?
It bothered me, man. It bothered me. We're coming out of the Phantom Menace. Remember, I went through this period of saw Phantom Menace 8 times in the theater. Was more, I always say, like, I was more into what the movie was actually doing, and then I backed off of it. It's one of my regrets of my fandom. I backed off of it. I was clued in. I remember telling my uncle, my now late uncle in Eagle Rock, like, this movie is talking about this, and it's this politics. And I just remember getting afraid and backing off and going, yeah, but Jar Jar sucks. And so Attack of the Clones comes out. Holy crap, that was a challenge for me, man. Now I look back and, you know, I feel slightly foolish, but it's like, well, the attack of the 50-foot woman. It's like, yeah, you idiot. It's got a 1950s diner in it. George has his influences. George has his likes. George wants to play around with genres and tell these stories. Did you not see Empire Strikes Back? Did you not see Return of the Jedi? You know?
Yeah.
Just one of those things.
Yeah. No, I totally understand. And I totally agree. I always loved this one. This was so great because I think maybe a part of it for me with the whole adventure serial pulp thing is, you know, that's just always what I gravitated to as a kid. Everything in this genre of comic books and science fiction and fantasy, I liked things that were like weird and different and exciting and were really loud about it, you know? Mm. And even kind of in my growing up experience, you know, I went to college, but got an art degree within college. And there was a lot of tension there about, you know, about highbrow versus lowbrow, right? There's an artist and then there's an illustrator. And if I did a painting that used too many hard lines the way like that you see in comic books instead of only shapes and colors, that's not really art. That's illustrating. Mm-hmm. And I think I grew up with so much of that tension between these, to me, sort of unnatural divisions between what is highbrow and what is lowbrow, that I always had this sort of knee-jerk, like, no, there's art. Yes, I understand that culturally, Attack of the Clones sounds like this cheap bargain bin basement, you know, knockoff VHS. You know, absolutely, I get that that sounds like that to the culture, but that is really judging a book by its cover. That doesn't mean it doesn't have value, you know.
Oh, 100%.
And that it isn't cool by itself, right? And then I think the other element to it too, of I definitely wouldn't have been able to articulate this in 2002, but there's always this dance of Star Wars of it has so many elements, and at different points in our life as fans, we really get attached to specific elements, and then sometimes we can just kind of say that the other element isn't there. Like, even if you're not in a place to be enjoying the silly humor, it's always there, you know? Yeah. It's a part of Star Wars, you know? If you're just kind of not into racing, it's always going to pop up in Star Wars. Racing's a thing. Like, you could racing, want to make sure I'm saying that clearly, that you could go down this whole list of, like, even if you're not into it right now, which is fine, it is still an essential part of Star Wars. Yeah. And I think Attack of the Clones is one of those just visceral pulp adventure serials. Flash Gordon conquers the universe, the literal title of one of the serials. Mm-hmm. That's a huge part of what Star Wars is, and let's not deny it.
Yeah, especially if you go around at parties and going, do you know George Lucas, he tried to make a Flash Gordon? He liked that kind of movies. What do you think about Attack of the Clones? Oh, God, that's a horrible title. You're not allowed to do that. I just don't think you're allowed to do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be your favorite title, but you're not allowed to do that.
Right. You can dislike it. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think just kind of historically, you know, it is a part of what Star Wars is. Or what Star Wars started out as. Maybe it'll evolve away from it. And I will accept that. But it is definitely a part of how Star Wars started. And for me, I think it fits. It fits Attack of the Clones. The title fits the movie because I think that movie leans hard into lots of different genres, right? It's a urban noir detective. There's a gladiator arena. There's big sweeping romance. It's a war movie, right? Even down to like absolutely 50s sci-fi looking Camino and Caminoans, right? It's all in on those references. So the title matching that vibe is one of the things that even though I have probably the most sort of like criticisms of Attack of the Clones, it's often the one I just want to watch.
It's so interesting you say that too, of just like we've talked about with Dexter's Diner. We did the scene by scene and literally having a 1950s diner inside of this 1950s kind of movie. And that's the one where George was like, aliens, like, what do you mean? Make them like they're flying saucer aliens and they're making clones. Like, this is one who was just like, let's do it.
Yeah. Let's go all in. Yeah. Any other thoughts on Attack of the Clones before we move on?
I joked in our emails, as long as I can have half hour on this topic, I don't want it to be a half hour today, but it's fun. And look, fun way to look back. I'm no hero for changing my opinion from then to now and growing and maturing. I think it's what we all should strive to be as Star Wars fans, but it is fun. I do love looking back at the 2002 specifically and me just going, what the beep?
It is understandable, and I still say what the beep, but in an excited way. Moving on to Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. Is there any room for interpretation here, Ken? How do you interpret Revenge of the Sith?
I consider it pretty direct, especially with the Phantom Menace leading this trilogy off, we've got a couple thousand years, right, of the Sith waiting to get the revenge, as Darth Maul reminded us in Episode 1. So I think it's pretty direct as well for me.
Yeah, I think this one is what it says on the tin. Like, we know what the Sith mean. We know what they want. We know that they are succeeding, and we know that they do want revenge, and they get it in this film. So I think this one is delightfully free of. Huge interpretation. The Sith get revenge. How did you feel about this one when it was announced, you know, and were you excited by that, the history of it, and have your feelings changed over the years?
I probably love it even more, but I did love it because number one, it provided me an opportunity in 2005 to say, did you know George Lucas originally named Return of the Jedi, Revenge of the Jedi? What? Because even then, a lot of Star Wars fans hadn't been plugged into that, or the casual fans around me that I worked with. So it allowed me to sound smart, which is rare. But I loved it then. It was exciting. It was thrilling. A little bit maybe misguided for me in the fact of like, oh, finally dark and gritty Star Wars. And we do get dark and gritty Star Wars. It is there. So present throughout this movie. But I love the title then and love the movie and the title even more now.
Absolutely. Dark and gritty is a part of Star Wars that's always there as well, and one that that I can gravitate to from time to time, and definitely big chunks of my life gravitated to it. And Revenge of the Sith made me very happy because it sounded like foot on the gas, bad things are going to happen. This is going to be dark and gritty. But I love this title more and more every day. You know, when it was announced, you know, there was... You know, it was weird because there was such an up and down relationship with the prequels, as we've talked about. But even my friends who had been the most vehemently critical of Phantom Menace and then especially Attack of the Clones, I remember having conversations with people like, they got me. They got me back. I'm so mad at them. I thought they were so bad. I wasn't going to go to the third one, but Revenge of the Sith. Oh, and they're going to win. And it's going to be Vader and the lava fight. Oh, all right. I'm back.
and there, baby.
Yeah, I think there was almost this like, you know, I didn't have huge internet presence, certainly not podcasts, but it was like this moment during that prequel era for like something everyone's happy with.
Yeah,
the hell's that? Yeah. A Revenge of the Sith. It just fits so perfect. You know, it's just the now the circle is complete moment of it for Lucas to go like, you know, yeah, no, Revenge wasn't right for the Jedi. It is exactly correct for the Sith. So I made the right choice all those years ago to wait on that title.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There was a renewed energy for Star Wars when that was announced.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, people get excited about it, I think, because it's dark and gritty. But, like, pull back. That's pretty pulpy, too. Like, especially if you're not falling close to Star Wars. Like, what's a Sith?
Yeah.
The Sith's going to get a revenge on who? What? Like it is also owning what it is.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point. Not to belabor that too long, but just again, when you get to uppity about that stuff, if you grew up in the 70s and 80s and part of that early generation of Star Wars fans and you get too uppity on it, it's like, that's what I go back to. The Empire Strikes Back. It's not as eloquent as you might've thought at seven, you know?
Yeah.
But it's great. It's a great title, but so just embrace it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Love it, love it, love it. Now we move on to another era. We go to the sequels, Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. Ken, how do you interpret this title?
I interpret it as Lucasfilm got sold to Disney, and they needed to show everyone that they're back. No, but also there's some meta nature to it. We're going to discuss that. But this made sense. It was, to me, this was a bit of an answer that I've been asking of just like, whether it be in headcanon throughout the years or just when the sale does happen of like, wow. So what happened between Battle of Endor and what we're going to see now? What went down? Is it New Republic stuff, new enemy, Yuuzhan Vong? What do we got? And what happened to the Jedi, the Force, and all those kind of things that were coming out of Endor? And to hear that the Force Awakens, you and I were talking about it, the idea, I remember some of the early episodes, it's just like, okay, so the Force was asleep. Sounds like a joke. But it's you're getting some answers right in the title, and therefore it always kind of worked for me.
Yeah, no, I think I was always really excited by it because I think it you know, it's got that active, you know, present tense verb of awakens, but it's not crossing the curse doom line. So it was safe for people.
Yes, yes.
But still had enough of that flavor for me. You know, putting the Force right in the title was, you know, interesting. But I think for me, like just interpreting it now that we've lived with the film for a long time, you know, I think Rey at the time, it was absolutely about Rey's literally awakening. You know, there has been an awakening and her, you know, the light will rise to meet the dark. Everything is kind of explicit in the film. Her saying when she kind of flew the Falcon for the first time and escaped Jakku of like, I don't know what happened, but there was this awakening. Now, I think in retrospect, it's also Finn's literal awakening in in the village, right? Yeah. But I also just think it works so well for the actual events of the film. Of like the older generation has taken a hit and Leia's holding on to the best of her ability. But everything about the film, including like the plot of trying to find Luke, is all about the light side kind of awakening, right? Han is reawakened. He's right back in it, as Maz says. The Falcon literally rises again, right? R2 literally wakes up. By the end, like, you know, Rey holding out that lightsaber going, so you're gonna awaken? Yeah. A lot of other people have. You gonna do it, Luke?
Yeah, it's funny. I think you're so right, too, of and getting that answer that I'm talking about. Oh, okay, the Force is asleep and it's gotta wake up. I wonder what happened. I think I personally might have overlooked of what that meant for our heroes. And so I can say I loved finding out that Han and Leia had gone through some problems, were separated. Like, that's a choice I love. But I do kind of remember being like, wow, okay, things didn't go well. But it's kind of built into that title. I think you're very right to point that out.
Yeah, I mean, the Force Awakens is a great title. This is not a better title, but it really could have been like the dust gets shaken off, you know, the tarp is removed.
Yeah.
Well, and it has that spirit. It has that energy of we're back.
Yeah. And I think I may have, again, you know, so if now you're entering the era where you and I were on a lot of shows talking about this stuff. So some of my personal growth as a Star Wars fan is documented or unfortunately documented.
Mine as well.
Yeah. I don't remember going too hard after this title. I remember always being pretty positive about it. But after the teaser trailer, I really had that like, oh, yeah, this works for me. And after, you know, hearing Andy Serkis, you know, talking about, you know, Darkness Rises and Light Meets, whatever the exact quote is, I'm always bad at this. It just all clicked. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm on board for what we got going on.
Yeah. There's an awakening, the dark side and the light. And
there you
Falcon,
go.
Soren. Yeah. So let's get into the meta. Like, this is Disney. One could interpret it as very meta, very much reassuring. That Star Wars you like, the way you like it, is back.
Yeah.
You know, do you feel the cosmic force of marketing at work to a point where it affects your opinion about the title?
Do I think, no. I think I even enjoy the meta angle of it. Because I think Force Awakens is itself just as a movie, as some meta stuff going on that you and I love that's present. Love, mm-hmm. like Welcome Home and Chewie, We're Home means a lot. I remember... You were a champion early on of even the promotional shot they were trying to kind of echo on that trailer shot. It was very intentional. So I'm okay with the meta stuff and how then I think it sets the tone. The 7, 8, and 9, particularly I think 7 in large part of 8 is about we as fans have this legacy hanging over us, not just the actors, performers, and writers of the movies themselves, and now the characters inside the story. What Star Wars was, what Star Wars is absolutely cast a shadow every time out.
And yeah.
So I'm there for that kind of having a little fun with that.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. I can acknowledge that the marketing reality of finding the right title to relaunch this thing. But I feel like it's so present in the actual story of the characters that the title works so well. And the parts of it that are meta are just deeply, deeply powerful and meaningful to me. There is always going to be the conversation of, was it too nostalgic? Which I think is a fine conversation to have. But I always like to approach that conversation from, let's start from the point of, it is literally about nostalgia for the characters inside the story. Luke Skywalker is a myth, but no, he's real. You've spoken so eloquently about how much Rey's journey with in this movie from myth to reality, you know, Han Solo, like the war hero. You're like, it is about this new generation, you know, discovering this older generation and kind of the young generations coming into their own. But in that process, awakening this older generation. And you just can't deny that that is the truth of what the audience experienced in 2015. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly if you grew up with the original trilogy, but even if you were 15 when Force Awakens came out and you just watched those movies 5 years ago, you've still lived with it for a while. And the film is aware of that. It's not, you know, it's not, you can dislike it, but it's sort of like, it is what it is of that Luke, Han, and Leia are now literally in the real world from a long time ago, you know? Mm-hmm. And when Han is telling Rey and Finn, it's true, all of it. That resonates to people who've lived with Star Wars, of your right to like this stuff.
Right.
You know, it just, it is there. So I think The Force Awakens for me works for the characters, and it works in the way that it does talk to the real world of like all of these ideas that this, that, that Star Wars and the Skywalker saga represent. Those ideas are reemerging.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the film had to be, I think the title of the film and everything about it had to kind of say, we know what we're doing. We know what we're trying. And we maybe even know what you as fans have been through. We have to acknowledge a little bit of 1, 2, and 3 and some of the conversations around it. We know what we're doing. Go along with us and take this adventure and this journey with us.
Yeah. And we certainly did. We move on to Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. Now, Rian Johnson has been pretty clear in interviews and great documentary moments that for him, it's not plural. It's Luke. The Last Jedi is Luke. So setting that aside, do you interpret it as anything other than Luke?
I mean, Luke would himself, the character of Luke would probably be like, well, no, it's certainly about Rey. But I really, that's the end of the film. But I really think it is about the Last Jedi and the last of that, of the Jedi we knew as fans. I think Rey is part of a new breed, even though everything's, you know, she's taking the same core beliefs forward and connecting to all the Jedi that came before her. I think it, you can't, to me, I would argue that she definitely is taking some fresh steps in that direction, whether or not we get to hear or see those stories down the line. But it's about Luke. It's about Luke and dealing with this and dealing with the state of the galaxy, dealing with the past, and it all comes kind of down to his shoulders in a way for me. There's a lot to it, of course, and then how he's ready to move forward, and he himself, the Last Jedi, has to move forward and have faith in the fact that he won't be the Last Jedi, when even though he probably wanted to be at the beginning of this film. Probably, I think he kind of says it.
Yeah, and then he makes it fairly clear when he says, "And I will not be the Last Jedi," that is no longer what he needs and wants.
Yeah.
I really like the explicit. It is Luke. I love that documentary moment where we get to see Rian Johnson tell Mark Hamill the title. It's a beautiful moment, you know, and it's almost like, obviously they never would have done this, but you know, it could have been The Last Jedi ?
Right.
Because there is this wonderful tension of like, yeah, we know Luke is, you know, the Last Jedi from Yoda saying a version of it in Return of the Jedi. When gone am I, Last of the Jedi, where you will be. It's in the crawl of Force Awakens. Right. So we know Luke is this, but then there's this great tension of, you know, is that really what he wants? And for me, I accept that the creator says it's Luke, but for me, there's also like, and by the end, Luke does pass the baton, and by the end of the film, Rey is for now the Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it still works. Again, for me, sorry for repeating myself, but it's just like, it is about Luke processing all of this, all that came before and all that will come after, and him having to have that moment of faith, and that's why it all works for me. And again, and I know it was not a title necessarily new to the Star Wars galaxy. I totally get that. But it really, really is to me one of the more powerful titles of the movies.
Yeah, yeah. So is it a favorite then?
Yeah, for me, it's a favorite title, for one of my favorite movies. But again, it's just so simple, direct. It's beautiful. It's a little bittersweet. It's got some pain to it. And it's strong, man. It's just strong. The Last Jedi.
Yeah, it's incredibly evocative, and I think because it is an implied tension of will Luke be the Last Jedi, and I think that's why it's one of my favorites and has grown on me. I always liked it. It was always really intriguing. It created a pattern where like, okay, we're not going to go to adventure serial with the titles, mm-hmm. and we're always going to have a powerful Star Wars related keyword in the title.
Yeah.
We had Force, we got Jedi, there's not going to be any, you know, the second best hope or whatever. Like there's not going to be generic words. There's, you know, it's going to be distinctive. So I kind of thought about some of those things when it came out. There was that great rampant discussion across the internet of Jedi is plural, you know, it can be singular or plural.
On the Spanish title, they translated it. Yeah.
I love how excited we all get as fans about that kind of stuff, and then having fun with it in retrospect. But I think for me, what ultimately very powerful is the tension in the title, and there is resolution of that tension in that it is very strongly stated that Luke will not be the title of the film. That title, ultimately, by the time you're done watching that film, is we have wrestled with the mistakes of the Jedi, we have wrestled with personal failure, but we have confirmed that Luke should not be the last Jedi, that in specific, the Jedi should continue to stand up to darkness, to defend others, and explicitly to inspire kids across the galaxy. You know, Tamiri Blegg is not, a teaser for the next movie, as we all found out. Tamiri Blegg is the evidence that the Jedi are necessary and should continue, because the inspiration of somebody saying, I will stand up and face darkness and defend people. That inspiration, you see Tamiri Blake, who's not leading a great life, and the power of being inspired by change is possible. You have power. You can stand up and make a difference in your own life. You can stand up and make a difference in the galaxy. To me, like, that is the power of the title, The Last Jedi. It's not the negative that the Jedi should end. It's that Luke should not be the last Jedi. That's the power to me when I hear the title.
Yeah. Still to this day, I think sometimes the conversation about that film, it's as if people stopped at the trailer and the title. And I'm being a little snarky with that. I understand. But, that trailer of the Orlando teaser of Luke saying it's time for the Jedi to end. And we all gasped. And then the title comes up and it's like the story starts there. And that's what the title was trying to tell you.
Yeah. And it ends somewhere different. And speaking of endings, unless you have any other thoughts on Last Jedi, we're on to our final film. Are you ready, Ken?
Yeah, even if I have some more thoughts, I'm sure the thoughts will be out in the world some other place.
Look for Ken's thoughts somewhere, mysteriously on the internet. The final film is, of course, Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. How do you interpret this one, Ken? What does that title mean to you?
It is certainly about Rey, certainly about the name, certainly about the ending, but it's also about, I still look at a little bit of the name itself, even though I wouldn't say, you're dealing with a ton of Anakin in the film. I know we all wanted him to have ghost campfires with Rey, but, I still take it as it's the Skywalker saga, the Skywalker being a family, a house, if you will. And so I still take it as that just as much as Rey, which is, I would say it's pretty specific to Rey. And even JJ I remember before saying, you'll find out at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
You have no doubts what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Particularly, when there was lots of questions. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think there's like this kind of larger interpretation that I go with, which I'll get to in just a second. But I think on what Abrams might have been talking about, I don't know, because I'm not him. But I feel it does get pretty literal in that by the end of the film, Rey, with Luke and Leia looking on and smiling, takes the mantle of Skywalker. Great tradition in Star Wars of found family mattering and choosing your path and your destiny, all that stuff. But she is, by the end of the film, she is Rey Skywalker. And then there is a scene in the film where, Jedi say, rise.
Yeah.
You put those together, that's literally the title. And it's, about Rey. And to me, like the same way that you can look at some of the films and go, I got this larger interpretation, but Phantom Menace is Palpatine. Yeah, Return of the Jedi is Luke, and you can get some Anakin in there. Like, I feel the same way about this one of like most prominently, most explicitly, it's Rey with all this other big room for big ideas.
There's a lot of big ideas in this film. This title leaves room for it. The title itself, I think I love more and more. I think it looks great. I think it sounds great. It's still somewhat awkward to me and clunky at times, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you just mean like the way it flows off the tongue?
The way it flows off the tongue and but I'll tell you what, the reveal, when you're in a panel at that point, it's not even a panel. It's a rock concert in Chicago. And Palpatine himself is there and Roll It Again and all this stuff. When you're there, it's certainly easy to get caught up in the moment, but that first reveal of the title, because remember they were sitting on that thing.
Oh yes.
For a long time. That first reveal, and then it turned the rise. Ah, man, I did the thrill I experienced. It just the return, the revenge, return, rise, the R's you and I talked about going into the panel, everything on Force Center. It works for me on an emotional level, maybe more than it does on the way it looks on the side of a box.
Oh yeah, no, that totally makes sense to me. And yes, that was one of the great fan experiences of my life, of being in that room and that title being revealed and Ian McDiarmid's Roll It Again. Amazing stuff. I think for me that the title, I sort of laid out how I think it can be applied very, very practically and directly to Rey. So I do think Rey is front and center, is the main of all the main characters. Trying to be gentle because I understand people have a lot of different takes on this and want to be respectful. But for me, I think when I hear it, it can be connected very directly to Rey. But for me, it is about all the Skywalkers. It's about what the Skywalkers ultimately stand for, right? Because the Skywalkers have, you know, they start with such great, great hope and possibility with Anakin, and they fall, and then Luke, you know, and Leia, you know, do such great things for the galaxy, but then they have some problems, and then Ben does awful things to the galaxy, and it's this, you know, great back and forth pull and manipulation by Palpatine over three generations of what is the true like fate of the Skywalkers going to be? Are they going to be able to escape the doubt and the fear and the anger? And are they going to be able to sort of live up to the best of what they could be? And I think when you look at the rise of Skywalker, of like what the Skywalkers stand for, that really feels like it's present for all of them. You know, Rey succeeds, but so does Ben. You know, I'm fine with people going like, you know, the rise of Skywalker is about Rey and Ben. He literally rises from a pit as well, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also about the triumphs of Leia and Luke, and even Anakin is saying, you know, restore the balance as I once did. I feel like there's so many ways to interpret this if you want to have strong opinions about who it's about. But it, to me, it's just very obviously, in my opinion, about the Skywalkers finally escaping all the doubt and the fear and the anger and being the best of what they can be.
Yeah. Yeah. I could roll it out to a real general view of the Skywalker family, because again, that use of, it's not the rise of the Skywalkers, it's the rise of Skywalker, but Skywalker, even Snoke says it all through the films, the comics. Boba Fett says to Darth Vader, I can only give you his last name, Skywalker. It's such a name that carries so much weight in the galaxy. So to see it from that and have it end, it's a positive title, right? It's you're not falling, you're not slipping. The slipper and slope of the Skywalkers, it's rise, and it works on that level for this family we've been following now for 9 films.
Yeah, absolutely. So you kind of mentioned this, being so excited about it, getting to talk about it a lot. I had been big on, I thought Skywalker would be in the title just because they had a big, significant Star Wars name. Right. In all the titles, they had really said, we're looking at this as a Skywalker saga. So I thought Skywalker was going to be in the title. I think Jennifer, when we were talking about it, suggested Rise of something. So
yeah,
we got close to predicting it. Other fans did just predict it exactly, explicitly. How did you feel about that process of being kind of close to it when it was revealed?
Yeah.
Did that make you enjoy it more, less, have no effect?
In this particular case, I think it made me enjoy it more. I think overall, even especially when it comes to Star Wars, I often say, like, I don't want any of my predictions to be right, because I want to be surprised, and also I don't feel I have that skill level to be creating this stuff. So with this one, though, it's the end of the Skywalker saga. It's film 9, and then you could throw in Rogue One and Solo, as you and I have talked about on a podcast before. It just, being so close, it was the end, and it needed to be the end, and it needed to be this, and it was so positive, and rise is a strong word. It's a strong, hopeful word. when I say it's awkward, I just mean, yeah, it looks a little weird on the side of a box or a t-shirt, and the use of Skywalker versus the Skywalkers, all those kind of things. Not that I think that would have worked better. I really don't think that would have worked better, but I being that close, it just meant like, yeah, we're all doing this collectively. We're going home. We're going home. We're going to the end of this journey. And it should feel somewhat like we kind of not know where it's going, but just have this all kind of make sense. It's what we've been building to for 40 years.
Yeah, man, the word home, I think, is just perfect because, you know, I prattle about, oh, how close we were with the prediction. I don't mean any of that from the sense of like, I want to be, you know,
right,
making bets and, you know, about guessing things right. Like, I don't have a huge investment in that. I agree with you. It's great to be surprised. It's important to be open to being surprised. I think the reason it was meaningful to me is because I kind of hoped it would be an R name to connect to it. The Skywalker thing made like this intuitive sense to me. And I think it was because of exactly what you said, home, that there should be a certain sense of inevitability to it. Like the final note in a song, right? Like, even if you know nothing about music, even if like me, you're tone deaf and you can hear music, but you can't sing it.
Yeah, same.
You can feel as a human in your gut. That's the final note. That's where it had to come back to resolve, to be complete. Mm. And for me, The Rise of Skywalker really gives that emotion.
Yeah. I still feel that. I still feel that at the end of the film, I feel it all the way through. And Harrison Ford and Chewbacca, you know, Peter Mayhew and Yonah Swedemo pop up in Force Awakens and say, Chewie, we're home. And I think it took three pictures to actually get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. Any closing thoughts on the titles of the Skywalker saga?
Yeah, I love them all. I love them all. It's such a fun discussion. It takes you back, and it's a lesson in patience. It's a lesson in taking a breath. It's a lesson in having fun predicting what they mean, but not getting caught up to it, and maybe listening to what the title's actually telling you.
Yeah, no, this has been really fun. I heard some great thoughts from you that I haven't heard before, some great insights, and it's really fun for me to walk through it because I realize that the titles are something I'm more opinionated about than I realize. Yeah. And they are, of course, my opinions. But I think they're fascinating because they touch on so many things. They are marketing. Most of them had to be, right?
Yeah.
They do affect how successful the film is going to be, but they have this great emotional resonance of, do they fit the chapter of the story that they're telling? Do they make sense one way and then years later get recontextualized by something else? You know, how open to interpretation are they? There's so, and then once they get going, how much are they speaking to one another? And in that endless conversation of, is it too much respect for the old, or is it too much bold new? All that stuff, so many interesting ideas to me tied up in the title. So I really love discussing it. And my final thought is I can't wait to discuss some more titles.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how they change and evolve over the years and what new influences sort of creep in and affect the titles, you know?
100%. Rogue Squadron. What does it mean? Is it a squadron of rogues? We're going to find out.
Yes. And, you know, I know it's going to be called Andor, but, you know, Curse of Cassian. That would have been a good title too. I'm fine with some pulpy ones.
What's your line? Curse or Doom? That's the line, right? That's the line.
Yeah, that's the line that I don't think people can handle, a curse or a doom.
I would agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe all Star Wars titles from now will just be main character's name. That'll be fine too. We can wrestle with that on another date. Thank you for going down this deep dive of the titles with me, Ken. Do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. You can find us on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and Spotify, among other places. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Always excited to have new patrons on board. From there, you can access our Discord server, where this week we're discussing the character of the week, Captain Roose Tarples. Yes. You can follow me at Catnapsuck. Go to my website, catnapsuck.com. I'll have updates on comedy shows that I'm doing, you know, while I still can, or they're still scheduled. August 31st, one in North Hollywood at the Ha Ha Cafe. For Joseph, where can they go, sir?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, at Joseph Scrimshaw, and follow all of my other comedy adventures, comedy albums, I'm sure future shows, all sorts of stuff like that on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for all of the titles, this has been Four Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.